Good morning. How is everyone doing this morning? I hope well. So today, we're going to start on chapter 9, Revelation chapter 9, and it starts the fifth seal. The fifth seal has a lot of parts to it. The fifth trumpet, I'm sorry. So it's going to be a few parts to take care of this particular trumpet. So I'm going to start off with a little bit of a intro, first few verses of chapter 9. It takes up a good portion of chapter 9, so that's why it's going to be a little bit more piecemeal on this one. And to take a look at our little diagram here, the fifth trumpet, let's see, one, two, three, four, five. You see that that one with that cloud kind of showing. And what it talks about is Satan is actually given the keys to the bottomless pit, and that he's going to release the bottomless pit, and it's going to be these locust-type creatures that come out of the pit. But I want to kind of give a little background on what I think is going on here, and some going back a little bit in what we've already talked about in Revelation. Might find interesting. And just to review our little hepatic structure here, again, we're in the second set of sevens of the three sets. We got the seven seals we went through. Now we're in the middle of the seven trumpets, and we're on the fifth trumpet. And then after we get done with that, we'll be going on to the bowls. So that's where we are now. And I will jump in on some verses. And I got some pictures this time to show you, which you might enjoy. So, and the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. So here it's pretty plain that this particular star is a person, because it says and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Now, because of the what's going to happen when he unlocks his bottomless pit, tells us pretty closely, but also tells us in verses coming up who this person is, and it is the Antichrist. Well, it's actually Satan, and so I think that because he's falling from heaven, and this is the fifth angel sounding, so it's the fifth trumpet, that this is the point in time that is talked about in where Satan is cast out of heaven for the final time. And I'll show you some verses on that too. But over in Isaiah 14, 12 through 14, we got a little bit of a little talk about Lucifer himself. There's not a whole lot, and it's a good portion of scripture that kind of talks about Lucifer and who he is and how he got to be the person he is. So starting in verse 12, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. In this case, when they say the stars of God, I believe that's referring to the other angels. And originally, Satan, Lucifer, was the chief angel over all the angels, and that he had dominion, and he got a little power hungry, so he thought that he could become above God and become as God. Well, that was a mistake he made, but he's been living that out since then, and that a lot of what's happened to the earth and what's to happen is based on his falling. So Isaiah 14:13, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High. So he wants the big guy's job. A couple other verses on this same subject, over in Luke 10:18. Here Luke is talking about, as he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. another indication that he's going to be thrown out of heaven. And in 2 Thessalonians, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except that come a falling away first, that the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Satan has lots of different names in the Bible, and there's quite a few. This is another name for him, the son of perdition. Actually, the son of perdition is actually Satan's man, the Antichrist. I apologize. Who opposed and exalted himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Remember ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things. I find it fascinating, too, that when Paul was in Thessalonica, he was only there for a few weeks before he got thrown out almost and had to leave. So he's writing these letters back and because they're sending him notes about questions they have. But it's interesting that he was only with them 3 weeks, and the two things that he taught, one was that the salvation through Jesus Christ and him only, and he died, buried, and resurrection, and that he also taught them about the end days of the rapture and the second coming and the Antichrist. So I find it fascinating that these brand new Christians, that the church that Paul founded in Thessalonica, he taught this right away. Continuing on in 2nd verse 6, and now ye know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. So what Paul is talking about here is the fact that we as a church are withholding Satan from being able to fulfill his mission to take over the world, and that that time is going to come to an end. But right at the moment, he is being withheld. He's not allowed to be revealed until we're out of the picture. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. Again, talking about the church. And then shall the wicked one be revealed, when the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Now that phrase there is futuristic. It's going to happen at the end of the tribulation. Actually, at the end of the millennium, by the time Satan is finally put down for good. So I believe that this particular period right here, the fifth trumpet, is the midpoint. It's the period of time that they talk about in Daniel's 70th week, where the abomination of desolation is going to be happening either very soon, probably during this trumpet or maybe the sixth trumpet, but somewhere in here. And so we'll take a look at that further as we go along. But in Matthew 24:15, it also talks about this. I see Matthew 24 as a chapter that basically outlines the tribulation from beginning to end, more or less. If you kind of read through Matthew 24 and into Matthew 25 also, as more the end of the tribulation age going into the millennium kingdom. So right at this point, we're about halfway through chapter 15, chapter 24. And this is when Jesus is talking to the disciples. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whosoever readeth, let him understand. Two great things about this verse. One, it tells you that that Daniel definitely was a prophet, and that makes the book of Daniel prophetic, and that Jesus signifies it by saying that Daniel was a real person and he is a real prophet. So that's kind of like great proof that the book of Daniel, which has a lot of futuristic stuff in it, is true. Because here we have Jesus telling us it's true. Now, as I've heard other commentaries say, if you don't believe Jesus is who he says he is, then you got bigger problems than who Daniel is. Verse 16, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. When this happens, it's going to be catastrophic. It's going to be, neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. That means when you see this happen, beat feet. Don't do anything but run out of get out of Jerusalem. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in these days. But pray ye that your flight be not in winter. Because actually Jerusalem does have snow. It does get snow in the wintertime, so it could be a hindrance. Or neither on the Sabbath day, which makes this statement very, very Jewish. So if some people like to try to include a lot of things about the church being here. Well, it doesn't say anything about, of course, we don't follow the Sabbath day as strictly as the Jews do. And there's a lot of places in the world that you don't have to worry about winter, because winter doesn't have snow. Like, mostly here in Arizona, it doesn't have snow. Even when we do, it's so light, it's not a concern. So I think that's important to realize that what's happening in the tribulation is all Jewish. Now, there will be Gentiles saved, and don't get me wrong, I believe that's true. But the main emphasis is the Jewish nation. Here's we'll be coming to this chapter here pretty soon. But in Revelation 12, it also talks about this same period of time. And the woman fled into the wilderness. The woman in this case is Israel, where she hath a place prepared of God that they should feed her here, her there, 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years. And that, I believe this is what happens at the abomination of desolation. And when that happens, the Jewish people are going to beat feet and go to a place according to in the wilderness. And most people I've talked to, and it makes a lot of sense, there's a place called Petra, which was, maybe when we get to chapter 12, I'll have some nice pictures of it. Really neat place. You can go there and visit today. It's a fascinating place. I'd love to visit. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. Now, this is the part I was talking about that is symbolic of, by the end of this, you're going to see where Satan is thrown out of heaven for good. And prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. See? So Lucifer and his angels are no longer found in heaven. Up until this point, and even now, Satan is allowed to be in heaven. Now, he's no longer a resident there. He does go there and complain about us all the time. Like, oh, look what Dana did, he can't be one of your children. He did something really bad. And I think Jesus is our in-between. He's standing there as our lawyer saying, nope, he's covered by the blood. And praise God for that. Imagine what it's like in the throne room these days, just constant peppering by Satan about all of us in the church, who's doing what. So I'm sure that God hears an earful all the time. Verse 9 in Revelation 12, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So I believe this fifth seal is when, fifth trumpet is when this happened. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. See, there's a verse that tells us that that's what Satan is doing right now. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they loved not their lives until the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, of the seal of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he know that he hath but a short time. Now he reads the Bible just like we do. He knows he's got 3.5 years, basically, from this moment until the end. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman. Again, the woman is Israel, which brought forth the man-child. And it's just confirming who the woman is in this, is the one that brought forth the man child. When we study Revelation 12, I'll explain what that is. But the man child in this case is Jesus Christ. Because the beginning of chapter 12 gives us a little history lesson of Israel, how it was born by coming out of Egypt, and that it came to the point where Jesus was born, and that Satan, all through that period of time, was doing his best to try to stop that from happening. We'll get to that when we get to chapter 12. I brought it in here because I really wanted you to see that it really looks like the correlation between Daniel's 70th week and Daniel 9:27, where it states that in the middle of that 7-year treaty, he's going to break the treaty, and that which is the abomination of desolation. And that's when Satan is going to put himself in the temple and say that he's God. It will be through his man of the hour, which will be the Antichrist, but he'll basically be possessing the Antichrist at that point. And so Satan will actually be down here on earth with lots of wrath. So I want to talk a little bit about this bottomless pit it mentions. And this is where I got some pictures to show. Because I got a feeling that this bottomless pit is actually a place in Caesarea Philippi that Jesus talks about. And there's also another thing I want to bring in too, because of some things that Jesus said, but in both Revelation and in Matthew about Satan and where he resides. So here in Revelation 9:11, and they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. These are some other names of Satan, and they call him the angel of the bottomless pit. So, which that basically means that that he had the key to the bottomless pit. He was given the key, so he's given permission to wage war by God. Remember that Satan can't do anything by himself. So it's a realize that whenever you feel like you're being persecuted by Satan, all you got to do is pray to God, and in the power of Jesus' name, Jesus can take care of that situation for you. And it doesn't mean that Jesus, actually, there was one time when Jesus actually allowed Satan to test Peter, and I'm sure he's done it to a few of us too, to test us, to make us stronger. So, but remember that Satan can never do more than Jesus allows, and that Jesus will always be there to stop it if it goes too far. So it was a really comforting words if you're a child of God. Also, in Revelation 17:8 talks about the bottomless pit. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. So we're going to be talking about the beast and the bottomless pit. And ultimately, that's going to be Satan's home forever. Because we get all the way to the end of Revelation 20. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. So be mindful that Satan may have power over this earth now, but it's not going to last forever. Okay, back to the text, Revelation 9:2. And this is a passage that, and he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. So I found some interesting verses about this pit that I thought that I found fascinating. The first thing I want to say is that over in Revelation 2:13, Jesus talks about Satan's seat. And this kind of ties in a little bit to the bottomless pit, and I'll show you why. But really, to refresh your memory, this is the church of Pergamos. I know thy works, and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. And thou holdest fast my name, and hast not denied my faith, even those days wherein Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you, where Satan dwelleth. See, where Satan dwelleth. That's the two things I want to key in, Satan's seat and where he dwelleth. Well, in Germany right now, there is a place that's called Satan's seat. And it's a fascinating, let me show you a picture of it. And this is Satan's seat, as it's called. It was actually a shrine that was made for Zeus. And I guess somehow in Greek Roman theology, mythology, that Satan and Zeus are one and the same. And so this is called Satan's seat. And this was in Pergamos. And it was disassembled in Pergamos and moved to Germany, of all places. And I found that kind of fascinating. Here's it from a different angle. So this is the Satan seat that Jesus was talking about in that verse. And this is that area. This is an area in Caesarea Philippi. There's a painting of it, and that there's some different thrones. They have different gods and goddesses, but that one in the middle there is for Zeus. And when Jesus was in Caesarea Philippi, he talked about there was an incident where he talked about Satan. But if you see over behind this to the left here, you see a big hole in the wall. That's actually a cave. And in that cave is a pit. It's called the bottomless pit because it's full of water. It's a spring. And it's flowing today. I got some pictures of it. There's the hole today. Of course, the temple is gone. And you can see the water coming out of it. It flows all the time. And they call it the bottomless pit because they don't know how deep it is. They can't measure to the bottom. And so when Jesus was in this area, he actually commented about, he commented in Revelation that he knew where Satan dwelleth and where Satan's seat was. But also over in Matthew 16:13, he talks about him and his disciples went up to Caesarea Philippi. And he was talking to his disciples and saying, "Whom do men say that I am, the Son of Man am?" And this is that famous scene that Peter says that you are the Son of God. And Peter gets, acclimated for it, for being, for understanding, because he said that that you didn't hear that from, let me just run through it real quick. How's time going? We're almost done. 23 minutes. And they said, some say that you are John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And he said unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for thou flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven." And it goes on and it talks to Peter some more. The verse I want to concentrate on is actually 16:23. And this is where Peter, but he turned and said unto, let me back up a verse first. Get the right verse here. There's one point that Peter took him, I don't know, it sounds like he grabbed Jesus and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." It was after Jesus was telling them that he was going to have to be died and buried and rose again on the third day. And Jesus' response is quite interesting, because he actually says, but he turned and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." And here they are near this thing called the bottomless pit, in an area that has a shrine of Zeus, and that in the comments that Jesus has made about knowing where Satan resides, it almost seems like Satan actually came up and was had influenced Peter into saying something improper to Jesus. And Jesus immediately recognized it and said back and knew it was Satan doing it and told Satan to get lost. And it's something to be careful about is realize that Satan is very, very powerful, so don't mess with him. He's not somebody to mess around with. He's got a lot of power. And so if you ever feel like you're being, most likely if you feel like you're being attacked, it's by one of his minions. Because Satan himself is very, very powerful. And that the only person that has power over him is God himself. So good thing to keep in mind. So I wanted to... So anyway, from gathering all these different little tidbits, it kind of makes sense to me that, I'll show you again, that this hole here being the bottomless pit, we're talking about the bottomless pit, Jesus knows where Satan resides, and it could be Caesarea Philippi, but he was saying it to the church in Pergamos, which is up in Turkey, which is not near Caesarea Philippi. But because he makes reference to the bottomless pit, and that in this particular area, as known as that, kind of maybe a clue. There's something else I ran into, though, when I was reading this, I found really fascinating. You see this figure here? Well, Zeus had a had somebody called, what was it, Athena? It was a figurine that was supposedly part of Zeus. You notice that this particular figurine here, you'll see a person that has wings like an angel. Well, you know that Satan is a fallen angel. And if you notice that this chariot that they're in, this is supposed to be the chariot that Zeus rides in, and it's being driven by this this figure of a fallen angel. And you notice there's four horses. And the funny thing is about these four horses, that these are four horses are... I call the four horses of the apocalypse, which could be symbolic of the four horses of Revelation chapter 6. I found that very fascinating. Just one other thing that's kind of interesting. If this, let me show you something again. You know, so the kind of the structure that this looks like. And I won't say too much about this picture. But when I was doing this research, this is a speech given by somebody at a structure that looked just like that Satan seat. And another speech that was given by, it was near that same angel that I was just talking about, that it's in Germany. And this person was actually facing where the Satan seat is. Kind of makes you go, Okay, enough of that subject. Don't know how true that is, but I was fascinated by it. I'd never heard that before. This is back in the article I found was actually back in 2011, so it's 10 years ago now. Anyways, back to the text. So we were talking about Satan's. Jesus knows Satan's seat, and. And the fact that Jesus actually turned and Satan was actually influencing Peter in this case and told Satan to get behind him. This is also mentioned in Mark 8:33. But when he had turned about and looked on his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of man." So that's my little take on the bottomless pit and Satan and where Satan's seat is. Kind of all kind of ties together. Okay, Revelation 3. So out of this bottomless pit comes these locusts. And I'm getting ready to stop for today. But in Revelation 3 it says, "And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power." So these locusts are really fascinating. There's some kind of a weapon by Satan to use to attack people on earth. You can see that he was given the key to the bottomless pit, so that tells us that God has given him permission to proceed. And they call this the three woes. So this is the first of the three woes, and things are going to really intensify now because like I said, it's now we're into the part where Jesus actually said this is called the Great Tribulation. And if Jesus didn't allow it to go any further than it does, that there would be no life left. So if you're seeing this and you're still alive during the tribulation, be forewarned that it ain't over yet. You still got another 3.5 years of whatever has been going on, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. All I can say is that I give you blessing, and that keep praying to the Lord, and be ready for anything, and try your best to survive. Okay, just a couple of things about this verse, and I kind of get the impression reading that verse, verse 3. Let me look at it again. When it talked about, there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. So that this sounds like it could be a creature that's empowered by Satan's demons. You're going to find out in a few verses that they have a king, and there's another reference somewhere in the Bible we'll talk about that says that regular locusts don't have a king. So that this particular, there's something different about these locusts. But I just wanted to mention one other place that we see that people can be possessed by the devil, and that I want to bring in a story. This is the story of the legion, a man that was possessed with demons, and Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. And I bring this up only because I wanted to mention that it is possible for Satan to indwell and his demons, others, and to do his bidding. And we kind of saw that a little bit in Peter. That could have been what happened, that he indwelled him briefly. And that that could have been also just that he was somehow influenced by him. Very strong individual when it comes to being able to influence us. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep. Here, Jesus is going to rebuke these demons out of this man. And there was there a herd of many swine feeding on the mountain. And they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. And he suffered them. In other words, basically, Jesus gave that demon permission. And this kind of shows exactly that. The demons don't have the power to do whatever they feel like it. They have to get permission. And so here he's asking Jesus if it's okay if you put us into something else. We don't want to be a disembodied demon. And so he said, "Yeah, it's okay." So there was some swine feeding nearby, and they went into the swine. And the funny thing is, as soon as they went into the swine went crazy and were driven off of a cliff into the, Then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake and were choked. So, kind of an interesting story that Jesus gave permission to do that, but it caused the swine to want to kill themselves, and they did. Basically, committed suicide is what it sounds like. So I'll just leave you on verse 4 here. And was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of the God in their foreheads. Now we'll just dissect that verse a little bit more tomorrow, but I just brought it in only because notice how it says that we know regular locusts. That's why these aren't regular locusts. Their main destruction power is that they eat everything green in sight. But here, these particular ones are told to not eat anything green, the grass or any green thing, or any tree, but only to cause harm to the men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And if you remember back to chapter 8, or the 7, I'll bring it up tomorrow, that remember that the 144,000 were sealed. by God. So these are the ones that can't be touched. But everyone else is fair game. So if you're not one of those 144,000, you are eligible to be for this particular punishment. So for those that like to try to say that they're mid or post trip, and you think you're going to survive all this, I think you're sadly mistaken that you think that you're going to be able to survive all the way through the I'm sure that there's some of you folks that might be listening to this that have heard of the preppers. And it's fascinating, you know, to try to prepare. And there's nothing wrong with preparing for, because things could get pretty ugly even before the tribulation. And so it's a good thing to always be have some supplies on hand and be ready for anything, you know, a natural disaster or even losing power for a week. I remember that happened once here in this area where the Coolidge area lost power. I think it was like 3 or 4 days. I know people were scrambling, trying to find ice to keep their stuff cold. It was like right in the middle of summer, too. Oh, excuse me. So I hope you found that kind of interesting, and we will continue with this this fifth seal tomorrow. So on that note, I'll end with a prayer. Thank you, Father, so much for this time. We get to look into your word and for all the things that you give us and help us to see that so much of what we see in your word just ties together with so many other things. It's really refreshing to know that these 66 books that you had inspired by 40 different people all had one author, and that's you, Lord. And I want to thank you and praise you so much for giving it to us. And I love researching and getting to know you better, Lord. In Jesus' precious name I pray. Amen. Okay, folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Oh, one more thing before I leave. Pastor is on his way here, too, and I hope that all you can say a prayer, knowing your prayers, that Pastor Jamie is bringing a load of equipment, a load of household goods on his way here, and that we can all say a prayer for him, that he has safe travels, and that everything goes smoothly. I know that he was in Dallas last night, so that I'm not sure exactly when he's leaving this morning, but that he'll be heading, I think he's due to arrive, I believe, Friday or Saturday. So we may see him this weekend, so that'll be good to see him. And so talk to you all later. Bye now.